Today's comment moderator, Sophia Lee. Sophia has considerable experience with Modslo, having designed, construction, and calibration of Modslo models at the site-specific and regional hydrogeologic scales. She spent 8 years as a consultant in Colorado before joining the Navy Facilities Engineering Command in California as a hydrogeologist and project manager. I'll now turn it over to Sophia to introduce today's presenter, a USGS Modflow expert, Chris Langevin. Sophia?
Thank you, Michael, and good afternoon, everyone. Today, I am honored to present today's speaker. Dr. Chris Langevin is a research hydrologist with the United States Geological Survey Earth Systems Modeling Branch. And with over 30 years of experience modeling groundwater flow, solute and heat transport, and coastal groundwater issues, Dr. Langevin serves as the USGS's caretaker for the Modflow program, which, as many of our audience knows, is used worldwide to simulate groundwater processes. His present work focuses include the development and support of Modflow, as well as other related programs such as FlowPy, CWAT, MP3D, USGS, and others. And with that, I'd like to welcome today's speaker. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Sophia. Thank you. I appreciate the introduction. Mike, are you going to send it over to me?
Yeah, did you want to look at the, did you want to pause to take a few minutes or a minute?
Yeah, I've been
the,
taking a look at that. First of all, I want to thank everyone for joining us. I'm looking at the numbers. It's really fantastic to see. We have over 650 people signed up for this. We have a lot of younger people working on groundwater simulations, you know, over 200 people about with 0 to 5 years of experience. So that's just great. So there's some interesting things in here. A lot of Modflow MT3D users. I would say half the people are applying models. Another 30% are reviewing models. There's a few managers. And it looks like people are fairly familiar with the different flavors of Modflow. So, that's great to see.
Okay.
So why don't you go ahead and send it back over to me?
And then I'll put one more reminder in for those folks who are attempting to communicate with us by raising their hand. If you have questions, comments, or technical problems, please use the Q&A box to alert us of those. Go ahead, Chris.
So I don't see the option to share my screen right now.
You don't, do you?
Do you want me to restart Adobe Connect? Oh, it did something and then went away.
Now do you see it?
I do not, no.
Okay, let me see if we can share it. Sorry, this is taking some time, so let's...
Of course, everything was working 10 minutes ago.
You see it now?
Yes.
Can you control it?
Sure. Well, let's see.
If not, you can just have it loaded on your screen, and we'll go slide by slide. You just tell me when to switch it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's go. Once again, I'm Chris Langevin. I'm with the U.S. Geological Survey. And today I'd like to talk about some of the latest advances related to ModFlow. In particular, talk about ModFlow 6, which is our current core version. So I'd like to give a little background, talk about some of the new transport capabilities that we recently released, show some examples, and then another thing we've been working on is this new API or application programmer's interface for ModFlow. So I'd like to present some of that to you and then conclude by giving you some information on some of the online resources that you may not know about. So of course I want to mention that this is a team effort. While I'm presenting this, you know, I work closely with Joe Hughes, Alden Provost, Sarah Pandey, and Martijn Rusher with Deltaris in the Netherlands, Jeremy White and Eric Morway. So I really want to thank all these guys for contributing. Go ahead. So, you know, we have a long experience at the USGS working on groundwater problems. And in the upper right, you see a picture of Tom Riley working with an electric analog model of Long Island. So that's how we used to do groundwater modeling. And over the years, our skills have certainly improved. And on the bottom right, you see a picture of one of the earlier conceptual models of how ModFlow works. And the idea was to develop these components. And this is a stereo system in the middle. But the idea is you could add new components and make it modular so other people could add to ModFlow. So go ahead. So this is a slide I like to show a lot of times because it really puts it into a historical context. This is a slide from 1979 from John Bredehoff talking, basically giving the marching orders to people working for the USGS at the time to develop ModFlow. And this, you know, written over 40 years ago, that's really pretty remarkable that we're here today to hear about, a subsequent version of ModFlow, something that was conceived of over 40 years ago. So this memo has some really neat concepts in it. It has some buzzwords in there like machine independent, flexible, modular, compatible, documented, teachable, all these things that still hold true today. So it's nice to see this long history here with ModFlow. Go ahead. So I had the opportunity to work with Arlen Harbaugh, who is one of the original developers of ModFlow, for several years after I moved from Florida to Washington, D.C. And Arlen, as one of the lead architects of ModFlow, saw it as much more than just a program. It's much more than just the software that you download. He really saw it as these core principles that ModFlow was founded on. One of the big ones is that it's teachable, and that's something that we have to do. We teach ModFlow to a class every year, and if you have to teach something like this, well, it gives you certain insight as to how the program should be designed, and that's something that we still believe in strongly now. It's also well documented, and that's something that the USGS has been really good at doing. So I know many of you have probably tried to download programs, and it's not all that often that you get well-documented reports that go with that. And I would say the USGS has done a real good job of that in the past. And then, of course, you know, it goes without saying, we spend a lot of time making sure it's reliable, robust, efficient. It's also extensible, so people can add to it, and all this kind of goes hand in hand. And then lastly, it's portable. It'll run on, and I've done it. I've run it on a Raspberry Pi, and it also runs on supercomputers. So we can run ModFlow on all sorts of different platforms. Go ahead, Mike. So ModFlow has become pretty popular over the years. Again, it's been around for quite some time. And so because of that, there's been a pretty robust support environment that has been developed for it over the years, not just by the USGS, by software developers, by consulting firms. People have developed programs to help build, run, and analyze their models. So this is something that we're really proud of, and it's something that sort of keeps ModFlow going. Go ahead.
Hey, Michael. Can you change your display settings at the top of the screen? Everybody's seeing the presenter view as opposed to the slide view. Thank you.
Thanks, Sophia.
You guys no problem. There we go. Thank you very much.
Okay, so over the years, you know, our groundwater problems became much more complex, and it's no longer, we're often charged with looking at much more than just a groundwater problem. And so we've had to address solute and heat transport problems, reactive transport. We have integrated surface water and groundwater flow questions that we have to answer. And so because of this, ModFlow is sort of busted out of just being used to address groundwater problems, and it's used to address a larger suite of problems. Go ahead, Mike. And so you see there's this ecosystem of ModFlow codes, where ModFlow has been coupled with or extended to support many different processes. And so this is a nice slide that we like to look at that shows sort of, you know, the ModFlow ecosystem. And really it's a testament to the fact that ModFlow is extensible. So other people are able to pick it up and add new capabilities to it. Go ahead. So what's new? Go ahead to the next one. We've been working on ModFlow 6 now for a while. Joe Hughes and I started with it in about 2013. So at that time, as you saw before, there were all these different ModFlow variants and flavors, and we wanted to bring them, many of these capabilities, into a sort of a cohesive new framework. And so that was one of the big goals for us for ModFlow 6, the ability to maintain that extensibility and make it better. So one of the fundamental concepts underlying ModFlow is this ability to have multiple models. And so we've released the groundwater flow model that came out with the first official release in August of 2017. Joe has recently released a compaction and subsidence package, and that's new. I'm not going to talk about that anymore, but that's something that's available in our current release. We have a new groundwater transport model, so it does full solute. ModFlow 6 can do full solute transport, and that was released just recently, back in October. We can also simulate coupled variable density flow and solute transport as well, and that came out also with groundwater transport. And I'll talk about these in more detail. And then there's this ModFlow API, this ability for other programs or other applications to call ModFlow and control it while it's running. We're also a big fan of Python, and so we develop and support the FlowPy program, which is used for constructing and running and post-processing ModFlow models. It works particularly well with ModFlow 6. We also develop and support ModPath and MT3D USGS, and so you'll see me mention some of these things as we move forward. Go ahead. So if you haven't seen ModFlow 6 and the groundwater flow model before, this is sort of the structure. And hopefully there are things that look similar to you if you've used ModFlow before. You know, discretization is on the left, initial conditions, output control, observations. We have all these capabilities. We've added a few things, and we've subtracted a few things, and we've changed a few things. So instead of the block-centered flow or layer property flow packages, we have the node property flow. And also the storage package. We have hydrologic stresses. Many of these you're going to be familiar with, you know, constant heads, wells, general heads, all these things. and then advanced dress packages. And so we spent a lot of time trying to synthesize and come up with some robust simulation capabilities. So one of the things that's important to see here is that when we rewrote ModFlow, we designed it using an object-oriented design. And so what that means to you is that a lot of these packages, you can have more than one of them applied to a single model. So it's not a big deal necessarily in this particular slide, but it's something that gives us a lot of flexibility. So for example, you can have multiple river packages in your model. And so you might have a different river package for this county and another one for another county, and allows you to sort of parse your model results much more easily and understand what's going on. More importantly, our models are actually objects. So that means we can have more than one model in a single simulation. We can have multiple groundwater flow models in a single simulation. So this gives us some really powerful capabilities that I'll talk about in a minute. Go ahead. So underlying the hood of the groundwater flow model is this ability to use different types of grids. We still promote the regular ModFlow grid to be used for, in most cases, just the grid consisting of layers, rows, and columns. However, there certainly has been a push to have more flexibility in the type of grid that you might use. And so on the right, you can see there a triangular mesh that's used to discretize the same domain. And for this particular problem, you see that we've added more resolution around some wells, around a stream, and around a lake. This is actually from a problem that we teach with in our class. So you may have desire to use an unstructured grid and add resolution and get more refined results around features of interest. Go ahead. So ModFlow 6 has been around for a little while. It was released in 2017, and so it's been picked up and is being used. And I just want to give you an example of some people that are using it in Nevada, the Nevada National Security Site. So a number of consultants are charged with developing a groundwater flow model for this area to look at some radionuclides that are present in the groundwater system there. Go ahead. And so they were charged with converting a hydrostratigraphic framework model that has 77 hydrostratigraphic units, many faults and structural features, which you can see in the right and in the red there. And so they had to convert this Earth Vision hydrostratigraphic model into a ModFlow 6 groundwater flow model. Go ahead. And on the next slide, you'll see the grid that they used. They use Python and FlowPy to convert this Earth Vision model into a ModFlow 6 groundwater flow model. And they're using a quad tree type discretization there. You can see that the cells are different sizes, and they've added resolution around features of interest. So this is a powerful capability to refine resolution in areas where you need it. Go ahead. So another piece of this ModFlow 6 framework is this multi-model coupling. And so as I've mentioned, any number of models can be included in a simulation, including any number of groundwater flow models. So in this case, you see on the right there's two groundwater flow models. And the unique thing that we've done here is we allow these models to be very tightly coupled, right all the way down to the system of equations that we solve. And so these models behave as if they're a single model, though you work with them as individual models. And this flexibility allows coupling of parent, child, grandchild models. You could develop a separate model for your top layer than from deeper layers, or you could even have a patchwork of county models that you could run in individually, or you could couple them all together to simulate a groundwater flow at the state level. Go ahead. So this is an example, a very simple example, just showing multiple child models and a grandchild model. And Module 6 doesn't care how many of these are. You have to tell it, you know, what you have, how many models you have, and how these models touch at their boundaries. But essentially, you have complete flexibility in terms of how these models are wired up. And again, they're all solved simultaneously, so you get some good behavior in terms of how well this performs. Go ahead. So this is a new feature that is in Modflow 6, and that is the ability to move water from one package to another. So one of the fundamental concepts underlying Modflow, previous Modflow versions, was this modular concept, and that was individual packages were never designed to talk to one another. So over the years, we needed the ability for packages to communicate. So if we have a river package or a stream package and a lake package, well, rivers flow into lakes and lakes flow into rivers. And Modflow wasn't designed under the hood to do this because essentially these packages are just boundaries or stresses on an aquifer. And so that's been something difficult to wrangle with previous versions of Modflow. So what we did was we standardized this with this water mover concept as just a generalized way to move water around the landscape from one package to another. We can take water from a provider and transfer that water to a receiver. So if you see on the bottom right, you see those pipes coming out of perhaps tile drains. If your model is simulating flow to drains, well, you can route that water from the drains into a river or a lake or some of the other receiver options. And we made sure to track all of this water because ultimately we may want to do particle tracking, or as you'll see, we may want to do solute transport through this whole system. And so having a trackable system of water movement gets us that as we extend these capabilities. Go ahead. Another thing that we wanted to do is, you know, we know MT3D is very popular, and so we wanted to make sure that the results from a groundwater flow model, a Modflow 6 groundwater flow model, could be used as input for MT3D. And so we've specifically allowed this to happen with MT3D USGS, which is a version that we distribute from the USGS that we developed in cooperation with a couple of the guys at Papadopoulos. So the one nice thing that we've done is we've modified MT3D or MT3D USGS to read the binary files, the results from a Modflow 6 simulation, and use those instead of this flow transport link file that you might be familiar with. MT3D USGS just reads our files directly. And if you have a regular Modflow grid in Modflow 6, well, then you can use MT3D USGS on the back end. So this is something that I think is pretty popular. Next. So we also have now released a Modflow 6 groundwater transport model. So this is something that we've been working on for a couple of years. It was released back in October. You may or may not have seen it, but it's out there now in our official release. So again, Modflow 6 was designed to handle multiple models and multiple types of models. So we released the groundwater transport, GWT, as a new model type in Modflow 6. And we've worked closely with a number of other people. Sarab Pandey has been a great collaborator, and you know, he has similar capabilities in his version of Modflow USG for doing transport. And so we've patterned this groundwater transport model, hopefully taking a lot of the nice concepts from some of these other versions, these other transport simulators, and putting them into this groundwater transport model for Modflow 6. And I wouldn't be a good model developer if I didn't have at least one partial differential equation in there. And this is ultimately the equation that we're solving in the transport model. Go ahead. So why don't we move through, let's go to the next one, and maybe one more, and maybe one more. So this is, I'm gonna walk you through some of the overall design of this transport model. since I know that most of this group is interested in solute transport modeling and remediation. So this is a high-level view of this groundwater transport model. On the left, we see similar packages as we have for the groundwater flow model. Some of the general features: the transport model in ModFlow 6 works with any of the three discretization types you might use. So it works with a regular ModFlow grid, or it works with some of these other unstructured grids. We've worked pretty hard to make sure that the transport model works with these active dry cells that you may get when you use the Newton flow formulation. So people that have been modeling for a while know that ModFlow had a hard time over the years with dry cells, and so a new method for handling that came up, a Newton-Raphson method, and so we wanted to make sure that the transport works with that, and which it does. The transport model that's been implemented uses an implicit formulation for all the transport terms, so that allows us to specify the time step sizes. We don't have any time step size constraints, so as a user, you actually specify the length of your transport steps. And a current requirement is that the grid that you use for the flow model has to be the same as the grid that you use for the transport model. And there might be ways to eliminate that restriction or relieve that restriction some in the future, and that's something that we're looking at. Go ahead. Go forward one more, too. So, of course, we have an advection and dispersion package, and they behave hopefully the way you would expect them to. We have central and space, upstream, and TVD schemes for the advection package. We don't support any of the explicit particle-based methods or the method of characteristics approaches. You know, those have some real strong advantages, but they're explicit. They have time step constraints, and so we've left them out for now, though it might be something that we look at in the future. The dispersion package, one of the things that we spent a lot of time on, particularly Alden Provost, was extending our formulation to make sure we can handle dispersion on unstructured grids. And so that can be expensive just based on the size of the stencil that you need in order to solve transport on an unstructured grid, but that's the default case, and we also can shut that off and do a faster or more approximate case for certain types of simulations. Go ahead. And of course, we spend all sorts of time making sure that what we've implemented matches with analytical solutions or compares with other models. In the bottom right, there is a comparison of just a typical plume movement where we compare ModFlow 6 with MT3DMS, and we get virtually identical results. Go ahead. I'm just say one quick thing here. We can handle generalized solute boundary conditions like you might expect, a source and sink mixing package, or you can just add solute directly to a cell, constant concentrations. Go ahead. We have what we call the mobile storage and transfer package, which in addition to the storage term, it also handles sorption, where you can use a linear or Freundlich or Langmuir isotherm to represent sorption. You can simulate first or zero order decay in production. And so this package is basically handling anything that's going on within a cell. Go ahead, and of course we've made sure to verify all this stuff and show that it's been implemented correctly. Next. So one of the things that is somewhat new under the ModFlow 6 transport model is this ability to support transport within the advanced flow packages. So if you have streams or lakes or unsaturated zone blocks or wells where you want to actually simulate the concentration in these features, rather than have to specify it beforehand as a user, you can actually simulate advective transport through these different packages. So you can simulate the salinization of a lake, or you can simulate the concentration within stream reaches. So this is a powerful capability that you can use, or you don't have to. You can also just specify the concentrations in these features like you have been able to do in the past. So this is essentially an alternative to SSM. And we can also simulate the movement of mass between these flow packages for any water that is transferred by the water mover. So go ahead to the next one. This is an example from the MT3DMS Supplemental User's Guide, where in the middle of this domain there's an injection well where solute is being injected, and then a couple cells to the right of that there is an extraction well, and that well is pumping water out at the concentration in that cell, and it's putting half of that water into a well on the north side and half of the water into a cell on the south side. And MT3D has a way to do that, and we have a generalized way to do that as well in ModFlow 6, where we're taking the simulated concentration in the extracted well, and we're moving half of it into each one of these injection wells. Go ahead. So let's go one more. So here we also have this immobile domain concept. It's a package. And for those of you that use MT3D or have run across the need to simulate multiple domains in your transport model in order to represent breakthrough curves or solute transport behavior, we have an immobile domain package where you can have diffusion into or out of these immobile domains. And within the domains, you can represent sorption and decay or production. But it's a separate package that represents this. Go ahead. And here's the equations where, you know, we can simulate the transfer from the mobile domain into an immobile domain based on a concentration difference and some coefficient between the two domains. And then we solve a separate balance equation for those immobile domains to represent that exchange and also the concentration in the immobile domain. Go ahead. And, of course, we've made sure that it behaves as you would expect, and we've compared it with MT3DMS and other programs. Go ahead. But one of the things that you can do, again, because these packages are objects in this particular case, you can have any number of these immobile domains. And if you look in the literature, you'll find that there are various reasons why you might want to have multiple immobile domains within your system. Next slide. And so the idea is that maybe you have clay and silt lenses within your system, and you can track the solute exchange between these different immobile domains, each with a separate package. And you can turn on as many of these things as you need in order to represent sort of the transport behavior that you see in the field. Next. So this is it. This is the sort of the full look at the groundwater transport model that we've developed and that is available now in ModFlow 6. So so I'm going to move forward. Let's go to the next slide. So there's two different ways you can simulate flow and transport with ModFlow 6. The first option is as separate simulations. Go ahead and go forward one, where you run ModFlow 6 once with the groundwater flow model. While it's running, it's saving its heads and flows to these binary files. And then you can go back and run another simulation, which is ModFlow 6 running with the transport model. It's the same code, but it's just two different simulations, and then you get concentrations at the end. And so this is how you typically run ModFlow and MT3D. One more. And one of the advantages to the current implementation is that you can use different time step lengths in that particular case. The second option for running the flow and transport models with ModFlow 6 is to have a coupled simulation where the flow model and the transport model are running simultaneously for each time step. And in that particular case, you get all your results at the end. And the advantage here is that you don't have to save these monster flow and head files to use as input for a subsequent transport run. So I know sometimes these large transient models might require gigabytes or even terabytes of of information to be saved and stored during while they're running. And so with this approach, these two models are running simultaneously and information is being passed back and forth through memory. Go ahead. And the one of the requirements here is that the time step lengths for these two model for these two simulations, or the flow model and transport model, have to be the same in this particular case. And so you need to think about whether or not that works for your typical for your application. Go ahead. So what's the status of this transport model? Well, as I mentioned, it's available now in Modflow 6. It's fully supported in FlowPy, so we go through great lengths to make sure that everything we do in Modflow is also correspondingly supported in FlowPy. We use FlowPy to develop all of our tests and make sure everything's running properly and build our examples. So anything we put into Modflow is essentially immediately supported in FlowPy. We also have this theory report that just sort of documents all the equations that we're solving in the transport model, and that's in review right now. There's a couple of limitations that I should mention. You know, MT3D-MS is multi-species. Our transport model, strictly speaking, is single species. However, because you can have as many of these transport models as you want in a single simulation, you could have a separate transport model for each chemical species and essentially do multiple species solute transport. You cannot simulate solute transport across grids yet. That's something that we're working on now and hope to have that out in one of our future major releases this year. Next. So a couple examples. Why don't we go to the next slide. I don't know if this is going to run. Can you click on this? So this is an example of this Newton formulation. So Modflow is a saturated groundwater flow model. It doesn't simulate flow in the unsaturated zone. So what you're seeing here is in the blue line across the top, we're adding recharge. This is a cross-section model, and this has been published in the literature, and we typically use it this problem to show what's going on, where we're adding recharge to that narrow strip across the top. Well, that water flows down and encounters some lower permeability material and forms a water table aquifer, a perched aquifer, which then flows off the edges. Water drips off the edges and flows into an underlying deeper water table aquifer. Let's go to the next, also an animation of transport, and see if you can start that one up. So this next one is showing what happens if we put a pulse of solute into that recharge water that's coming down. And so what happens is we've made sure with this transport model to simulate the movement of solute mass through the unsaturated zone. We're not solving Richard's equations here, so water is being instantaneously routed through these dry cells to the saturated part of the system. And so you can see this is a pretty cool problem that demonstrates water moving through these dry cells, reaching a perched aquifer, spilling off the edges into a deeper water table aquifer. Next. So this is a problem that was first described in one of the older versions of Modflow or Mach 3D, or worked with Mach 3D, or an older transport model that was developed by Lenny Konikow, Modflow GWT, where they wired up connections to simulate flow and transport for streams and lakes and through an aquifer system. And so you can see the red cells at the top show a contamination source. And then you see stream reaches 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then you see two lakes. The yellow lake is lake 1, and the green lake is lake 2. And so what happens is when the solute is released into the system, a plume forms, and it goes, the plume forms and moves into the streams and lakes as it moves downstream. So go ahead, there's a slide, there should be an image that shows a picture of the plume for different layers, and you actually see solute moving into the stream and into the lake. And so for this particular case, we're activating the stream flow transport package and the lake transport package. So we're calculating the concentrations in each stream reach and in each lake, just assuming instantaneous mixing within these volumes and then routing down to the next one. So this is also using the water mover and transport through the water mover and through all of the advanced packages as well as the underlying aquifer. Next. And so here's an example showing a comparison between ModFlow 6 and ModFlow GWT, this successor to Mach 3D, where the blue line on the right shows the concentration at the outflow of Lake 1 and where it flows into Segment 2. So that's the concentration shows up about 5 years after after it's released. And the dashed lines are showing ModFlow GWT compared with the GWT model in ModFlow 6. And then the green and red are what's going on at the beginning of stream segment 3 and also stream segment 4. And so there are some slight differences. The codes are very different. So ModFlow GWT uses a method of characteristics-based particle approach, and that's not what we're using here. But essentially, we've verified that our version is representing flow and transport through even relatively sophisticated surface water systems. Go ahead. One more. So for those of you that work in coastal areas or in situations where density contrast is important, when I was in Florida, I worked on a program called CWAT, which maybe some of you have heard of. It's a combined version of ModFlow and MT3D for simulating variable density flow and solute transport. And so we use that to simulate saltwater intrusion, aquifer storage and recovery, deep well injection, and a variety of other problems where density variations matter. And so we wanted to have CWAT type capabilities in ModFlow 6. And so we've added a new package called the buoyancy package, which is available now in ModFlow 6. And when you use a transport model to simulate a salt species as a separate species, you can do what you could do with CWAT, is essentially simulate coupled variable density flow and solute transport. And Saurabh and Alden and I worked on this hydraulic head formulation that allows us to implement these changes in ModFlow 6 and be able to take advantage of the Newton-Raphson formulation and get a lot of benefits by casting it this way. If you can click on that bottom right image, this is an animation. We'll see if it shows of just a denser plume of salt water within a freshwater box. And because of these density differences, this plume sinks in this box. And so this is something that you can currently represent with ModFlow 6 in its current form. Next one. The next one's gonna be an animation. Go ahead and start that. This is an animation in cross-section. It's a little bit jittery right now, but where we have on the right side, we have a saltwater boundary that's moving up and down, and we have a water table that's moving up and down with it, and it's because we're using this Newton formulation, this whole process of wetting and drying is handled in a much more elegant manner that even allows it to converge where this wouldn't converge otherwise. And we also have a dense saltwater tongue sort of extending into the box at the bottom and moving out. And so this is really some nice capabilities that people have been asking for in CWAT for a long time. And this is now fully implemented in ModFlow 6, this variable density flow and solute transport capabilities. Next slide. So What do you think? Does Modflow 6 work with PEST? And then next slide. Well, of course it does. PEST is model agnostic. You know, the way it can run any model, most any model, and it can do parameter estimation, optimization, a variety of things. So I want to show you that, you know, Modflow 6 is being used with some of the other programs you might routinely encounter. So go to the next slide. So I talked with my friend Jeremy White with Intera, and I know he's been using the transport capabilities of Modflow 6. He's been using this new transport model. So I asked him what he had going on and if he had an example of using the transport model with PEST, and of course he did. So he's been working on optimal plume management. So he sent me this example, and I'll just briefly show it to you. It's pretty cool. The idea is here, if you have a plume that looks like this, well, what do you do to clean this thing up? Let's go to the next slide. So if you have 20 years of treatment, well, a standard approach is to use some sort of standard five-spot injector extractor configuration where you pump water out of the middle of the plume, you treat that water, and then you inject fresh water back into the four red dots. And so this is a common way that we flush a system. And so the question, let's go to the next. And so if you run the simulation, the next slide will show you what that plume looks like after 20 years. It's we've cleaned it up some, and you know, maximum concentration has been reduced, and the plume size has been reduced. And so what Jeremy's been looking at is, well, is there a configuration that would work better? And I suspect other people have looked at this too, but Jeremy's got some real sophisticated tools for looking at this. So if we go to the next slide, Jeremy's been working on a multi-objective optimization capability for PEST++, this PEST++-MOU, and he's got a beta version of this, where you can simulate multi-objective optimization and also incorporate uncertainty. And so this is something that he's been working on, and it works within the whole system of PEST tools. So if you're familiar with generating template files and instruction files and control files, well, once you get this set up for your model, you can also now do this multi-objective optimization. So let's go click forward one. And so the way this works is what Jeremy's been doing is he has a number of decision variables. So he has the injector locations. He has multiple injectors, multiple places to inject fresh water back into the system. He can move the extractor around and also the rate of the extraction, and then how that extraction rate is apportioned amongst the injectors. And so then the idea is if you have several objectives, the total mass that you treat, essentially how much you clean this thing up, also a cost function, so how much does it cost? So you include some factor in terms of drilling as well as operation, and then a final maximum concentration. If one of the things you want to try to do is reduce the final maximum concentration that you see within some treatment area, and then all subject to these constraints where you want the concentration at a compliance point downstream to be less than what you would get with just the five spot configuration. And you also want to make sure that the mass flux to the downstream boundary is less than what the five spot configuration would give you. Go ahead, click forward one, or go ahead and click forward one more time too. So these are some plots showing the results of this multi-objective optimization simulation where we're looking at what are called Pareto fronts, where we're sort of balancing the trade-off between how much mass was treated, what the total cost is, and what the final maximum concentration is. So each one of these blue dots represents a result from this optimization simulation that shows a final sort of state based on an optimized solution. And so one of the things you can look at, this five-spot system is shown as these red pluses there. And so you can put the five-spot system in context of what some other optimum solutions might look like. And then based on these plots, you can pick, okay, I want a less expensive system, and I'm willing to compromise on this or that, and you can really play some nice analyses in terms of coming up with an optimal solution. So let's go ahead. So I'm going to switch gears now and talk about something quite a bit different, and I don't think we've really talked about this or presented this capability. This is all something that has happened pretty quickly over the last year or so, is this Modflow API. Let's go forward one, two more. So what is an application programming interface? So I would say that Modflow has always had it, and that is these reports. You know, Modflow is well documented, and you said, hey, I want to figure out how to add something to Modflow. You would go to these reports, and Tom Riley's shown there, and I had a report when I was in graduate school. I even put tabs on it because I was in there so much, figuring out how to add things to Modflow. And on the right, you see the Fortran code for how a well is added into the system of equations that Modflow solves. So we've always had this API for Modflow. And I would say if you have a report like this on your desk or on your shelf somewhere, and it looks something like this, it'd be great if you could send a picture of it and take a picture of it and send it to me. I'd appreciate that. So let's go to the next slide. So we have API for Modflow, and we've been developing this with Deltares, and specifically Martijn Russcher, who was a physicist and is working on groundwater problems now, and he's fantastic. And the idea is that to allow full control of Modflow while it's running, and we want to have access to all of Modflow's internal variables, either as copies or as pointers, so we can do it efficiently or change what's going on in Modflow. And then we have several different levels of control that we've implemented. Standard approach might be to make changes between time steps, and this is part of this well-defined basic model interface, or BMI, which is something that's it's sort of a protocol or standard that's developed and maintained by some folks in Colorado. And so we've implemented this standard approach into Modflow 6, so we can change things, we can control Modflow between time steps, and we wanted to take a little bit further and be able to change things or control Modflow within a time step and also within an iteration. And so one of the advantages here is that ultimately we're using the same exact code that you use when you download Modflow from the USGS website as what you would use if you use the API. Next slide. So let's go forward another one. And so the basic model interface, this is a flowchart showing the Modflow 6 flowchart, basically how it works when it's running. Now the BMI sort of requires us to implement an initialize and an update and a finalize routines so that other people know that those routines are available to be called externally. So next slide. So what this allows us to do is, this is a Python program that you could write or that I could write that would essentially fire up Modflow in the background as a DLL. We could initialize it then for a simulation that we want to run, get some time information, and then in Python or in C# or in Fortran or some other language, you can drive Modflow each time step, stepping through by calling this update function. So why is this important? Well, anywhere within this program that you see here, you can, or your program or whatever it is that you're using, can go in and dip its fingers into Modflow and see something or get the results from something or actually change something. So you might, if you want to couple Modflow with another model, this is a real standard way you would do that. You would have these loops where you might call another, you might download precipitation data from a website, or you might read information from a NetCDF file, or there's all sorts of things you could do that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. Next slide.
Hey, Chris, just let me know it's 2:00.
Okay. So we're through. We're getting close here. There's a. Why don't you go ahead and hit two more here? So you saw the update before. Well, the update is also broken up into several different components: a prepare time step, a due time step, and a finalize time step. So once again, you can control. You can run and can control Modflow at a much finer level. And then let's go forward one more, and then maybe one more. And this is really a novel contribution, I would say, this ability to run Modflow all the way down to the iteration level. So this gives us tremendous new capabilities for coupling models very tightly with Modflow. So this would even have application for the transport model. So let's say we have 10 different species that we're simulating in Modflow with our transport models. Well, we could run a time step or even an iteration. We could then call Freak or some other mixing model and have it mix these things up, and then we could push this information back into Modflow. So we can do all of this through an API rather than having to go into Modflow and make your changes there. So go to the next slide. And so we're really excited about this API because it allows us to have tight integration with other models. So, you know, I started off this presentation showing how extensible Modflow is and how it's used for lots of other reasons. Well, this gives us the ability to tightly integrate Modflow with other models. It can be called for many other languages. We have somebody using it with C# right now to couple with ModSim to do Western water rights in terms of simulating reservoir releases and prior appropriations. Are people looking at it for sensitivity analysis, adjoint state, parameter estimation, alternative solvers? There's all sorts of reasons. But really, it allows our users to customize Modflow in a new way, and I'll say that's extensible in that as we release new capabilities for Modflow, that you will just be able to take advantage of them by using the API. And go to the next slide. If I could see you out there, I had a little slide in there, somebody dancing and being very happy about this new capability, and I'm expecting that's what you are all doing now in your offices. So the next, let's go one more. There's a number of resources that you may or may not know about, and so I just want to draw your attention to them. Of course, Modflow is released through our USGS website. You probably have all have been here, been to this site. And if we go one more, let's go through this. We have a number of additional online resources. Go through until all six panels are full here. Huh. I just lost you guys. Are you still there, Mike?
Yep, we're still here.
You're still there? Okay.
It looks like the screen share has stopped sharing.
Hmm.
Hold on. I have this capability now. Can you see? Oh, so this is how it was supposed to work originally. Let's see.
There you go.
Oh, come on. So, look at that. It decided to come back to us. So, can you guys see this?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm back in the driver's seat. So we have some great resources that you may or may not know about. All of our development now is done on the open through GitHub. So we have a main repository where you can suggest changes. You can download the very latest. We have FlowPy here, which we're continuing to develop. We have also this executables repository on GitHub that you may not know about, where we provide executables for Windows, Mac and Linux for our Modflow official releases. We have a Python package that helps compile Modflow and variants on any different operating system with a couple different compilers. Each night, our executable is built and posted on a repository. So if you want, you can always get the latest and greatest. And then we've spent a lot of time developing these examples, where we have about 50 examples that are documented. And there's also Python FlowPy scripts for building these examples and making plots and doing all sorts of things. So I know I went a little bit over, but I'll just leave you with a brief summary. So Modflow 6 is presently our core Modflow version. You know, we have a flow model, a transport model, and this ability to do variable density flow and transport. We have this new API. It's not for everybody, but hopefully it piqued your curiosity. And so this is available. And then we have all sorts of additional ongoing and planned efforts. Parallelization. We have a version of Modflow 6 that runs billion node models, and we're trying to bring that mainstream. Particle tracking, Alden Provost is working on that. Mining applications, where you might need to change hydraulic connectivity during the simulation, adaptive time stepping, Richards, all sorts of things. So we're continuing to develop. And so I think with that, I'd be happy to add any questions. And I'm sorry, apologize for all the technical difficulties. And I think we do have a final poll where if you have any comments or recommendations, we would certainly appreciate it. So with that, Sophia, I think I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris. What a fascinating presentation, and we got a lot of questions in. Just a quick question, Michael. How much time do we have to answer questions today?
We're scheduled for to the bottom of the hour, so 23 minutes. We can, in theory, go a little bit over, but that's what we that's what the participants signed up for. So,
perfect. Well, we'll keep them as long as we can, right? Yeah. Again, I would like to thank all the participants for all of their questions. I've tried to summarize some of them into more generalized questions. We got a lot of questions on a variety of things. So let's start off with a really easy one, Chris. Is there a way to run Modflow 6 without FlowPy or Python? We had a question or two come in about module limitations or code limitations, et cetera. So if you're not a Python nerd, can you still use Modflow 6?
Yeah, so certainly, you know, Modflow 6, it runs the way Modflow has always run. And we use Python and FlowPy, but Modflow 6 is supported by Groundwater Vistas, GMS, so you can run Modflow just the way you've always run it in the past, and so we certainly support that and will continue to support that way of working with Modflow.
Great. And along similar lines, if you're not very used to using Modflow 6 or Modflow in general, are there any future Modflow hands-on training courses or maybe Zoom courses in the current time that we're in that are coming up that people should be aware of?
So certainly our course, we teach a course at the USGS that we sometimes open up to our cooperators and collaborators. And we, you know, with COVID, that's been put on hold. And then there are also a number of other Modflow courses that are taught by external vendors. And I'm not sure about the status of that. So I think we're probably getting ready to start talking about our next Modflow class, and so that would be something to keep an eye out for.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. So now let's get into some of the more specific questions. One of the ones that came up a number of times, actually, there were a number of questions that came up related to the multiple model coupled model functionality, right? And I've tried to summarize a few of them because a number of them were pretty technical or specific. So when it comes to coupled modeling, do the coupled models need to be constructed with specific flow conditions at the boundary, such as no flows or a TMR style specified head, et cetera?
So no, you do not put a boundary condition along the edges where they're coupled. Essentially what happens is there's another package. It's called an exchange. And what you do as the user is you say, I want to connect this cell from this model to this other cell in this other model, and you provided some information for how that face, what that face looks like. And so then when the program, then when Mobflow is solving, solving those coupled models, it's essentially seeing those two cells as being connected. They would, the way they would be as if they were in a single model.
And along those lines, do the models then solve simultaneously? Or does one, does the parent model need to solve before the child model can solve?
Yeah, so that's I think one of our really unique contributions here is that they are solved simultaneously, specifically by the same numerical solver that we use. So the solver itself sees that these models are all one, and we solve those equations simultaneously. So we do get really good convergence properties where we didn't have that in the past.
So does this impact all of the different packages or models as well? We had a number of questions come in with the GWT modeling. Does that allow for these simulated, say, concentrations to cross the grids, or would concentrations get stuck at the boundary between parent and child models?
So that's a great question. And there was one slide that mentioned that is currently a limitation with the current version, and that is transport will not occur across a model boundary. Now that is something that, and we specifically have put this on hold for the time being, because the way we're doing the parallelization, we're rethinking how these models communicate on their boundaries, and that is something we're working on as part of our parallelization effort. But yeah, ultimately the plan is, and hopefully soon, within the next few months, we are hoping to release this new capability where transport will be allowed from one model to another model. So right now, if you wanted to do what you're talking about, you would have to build a model grid that had like an unstructured grid that had nested refinement in some areas and not others, and you could do it that way. You can't do it where you're developing your models as separate models, at least not yet.
So speaking of those separate models, question just came in. Can you run, say, a child model separate from the parent model? Are you building a Mobflow model just like any Mobflow model? Or once you decide that one is a child model, that it has to be run within the parent?
Yeah. So the data files, the data sets are, you know, they're all independent. So basically, you would create a parent model, and then you could create a child model, and then what you could do is you could take that child model out and use the flows from a previous run and specify those flows or heads along that boundary. So yes, you can do that. You can run it either within this framework or separately later.
Great. And just going back to basics as well, if you're a longtime user of Mobflow and you know you've been using, say, Mobflow 2005 or even Mobflow NWT lately in order to do your modeling, should you just plan to switch to Mobflow 6 since it's the latest and greatest, or do you have the same capability to build those simplified models, or should you sort of stick with what you know and keep using that legacy version?
So I would say our position on this at the USGS is that our existing models, you know, Mobflow New 2005, USG, these are really good models, and we're going to continue to support them. But we are shifting our development efforts, and these new capabilities, we're putting them into Mobflow 6 and our newer versions. So if the existing versions are working well for you, you should continue to use them. If you're intrigued by some of these new capabilities or you really need them for some of your projects, then that's going to be sort of a compelling reason for you to move forward and switch to the newer versions. There's a lot going for the new version. I will say that. I'm biased because I worked on it, but you know, it's something you should consider as some of these other versions become legacy.
Great. So let's move on then. We've talked a little bit about the API and the coupled modeling features. We had a number of questions come in related to different package-specific questions, so I've tried to group those into one. When it comes to certain packages, such as the CLN package or the SFR, SFR2, et cetera, and whether or not they're included with Modflow 6 or function within Modflow 6 or even Modflow USG, where would be the best place for users to go to check to see which packages are compatible?
So that's a great question. Certainly, we have the documentation that comes with Modflow 6 will tell you, you know, what's in there and hopefully it's clear what's not. So the clean package, for example, is a great example that's in Modflow USG, and it's not presently in Modflow 6, though, you know, we have a multi-awk for well package. There is certainly some package issues that you need to be aware of when you consider these different Modflow flavors. Now, I would say that our perspective has always been to take the capabilities from existing versions of Modflow, including Modflow USG, and make these capabilities ultimately available in Modflow 6, provided they're generally useful. A lot of times we might have to revise how they work, perhaps. Like with the water mover is something that's unique to Modflow 6, and so we might have to rework things a little bit to work within our structure. But hopefully it's for the better. So there are package compatibilities and incompatibilities between the Modflow versions, certainly. And I would also advocate for there's a Modflow Google group that is very active, and this is a place where these types of questions can be asked, and there's quite a bit of knowledge there, and you can get responses pretty quickly.
So speaking about ideas and responses, we had a number of questions come in regarding maybe specific types of models or simulations that people are trying to do. So if somebody's, say, looking for how do I put in a horizontal well, or how do I model a pump and treat system, or, if they're looking for examples of what kinds of different simulations they could maybe do, maybe switching around boundary conditions or switching around hydraulic conductivity parameters as your run is, as your simulation is continuing. Is there a place that they can go to find these sorts of things?
So, well, that's a great question. And I guess, you know, with all of these models, I would say that the best way for you to understand, you know, what possibilities you have is to really understand, you know, what these programs do, even what equations are solving, so that you're able to look at the documentation and say, hey, I know how to implement a contaminant treatment system in Modflow 6 because I really understand what it can and can't do. I mean, there's discussion boards, you can ask us, you can ask, you know, other modelers and run those ideas by. There's not a, I don't think we have like, you know, a frequently asked questions or something like that. We have examples and we have, you know, we put out certainly ways that Modflow can be used that we've thought of. But if you're moving into uncharted territory, it's going to be incumbent upon you to really understand what it is you want to do and whether or not you can do it with Modflow or using the API or how that would work.
Great, thank you. So let's move on now to some specific groundwater transport questions. One of the first ones that came in that I thought was a really good one was, can you run a transport simulation on using GWT on top of, say, a steady state flow model, or do you need to use the same time steps or stress periods for your flow and transport model that is coupled with your regular flow model?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so there were some slides in there that mentioned that if you run a groundwater flow model first, maybe you have just a steady state flow model, you can run that as a separate simulation. You run that first, And then subsequently, you come back and you can run a transport simulation where you use multiple time steps and simulate the transient evolution of a plume or solute transport. So yes, you can do that, and that's how you do that, and that's what hopefully one of those slides was intending to represent.
So regarding the coupling functionality, or just the API actually, when it comes to the changing of model properties, especially with the GWT model, if you say want to, I don't know, dig a hole and fill it with a different hydraulic conductivity value, or if you wanted to change your mass transfer rate, is that something that is really easily implementable with this model to change these properties, or would you have to write a script with the API in order to do that?
So,
or say include multiple river packages through time or something.
So there is a so basically the way the API works is all of the internal mod flow variables are exposed and available for somebody to change. Now, if you can very easily go in there and change things, and it will not necessarily do what you think it's going to do unless you understand what's going on in the program. So the first version of the API that we're releasing is for developers. It's for people who understand what ModFlow is doing and they know what things they can change. You can't necessarily just go in and change the hydraulic conductivity value because if it's a confined aquifer, a conductance was calculated once up front and it doesn't automatically change in the program when hydraulic connectivity changes in the program. So as I mentioned, this was our first releases of this API is just exposing everything. Now as we move forward, our plan is to make it easier for people to do the things that are common needs, such as changing hydraulic connectivity or changing diffusion coefficient, and those may work the way you would expect them to. But all of the information in ModFlow is available for you to get at. Our next big hurdle is making that information transparent and useful to somebody who wants to use the API.
So speaking of transparency, if someone has a question regarding some of the new features in the GWT model, such as how to spread injected water using the MVT or UZT file, or how to utilize some of these new packages, or how they might compare to, say, how the packages worked in the older models, where would be a good place for them to find out that information? Would it be in the documentation or forums? It sounds like there's a lot of resources available.
There's a lot of resources available. I would say one of the things, and I bring this up because we spent a lot of time on it, is, you know, we have 50 or so example problems, including, you know, the ones that you've seen today, that really put the code through the ringer and show how to do a lot of the common operations that people are going to want. And so you can look at a write-up that explains the problem. You can see the results. A lot of times we have an MT3D or a ModFlow Newt or a ModFlow USG model run that shows the results from that. And so all of this is available now, all of these example problems, including equivalent simulations with other models. So that's a really good place to start, and then move on from there.
So jumping over to some more miscellaneous questions, we had a number of questions come in regarding automated time stepping. Is there an automated time stepping functionality within ModFlow 6?
So that is something that's on the list. We've been getting multiple inquiries about that, and so there's been a lot of push for us to add something similar to what Saurabh has in ModFlow USG, and so that is something that I think we are ultimately going to implement. It's also something I think you could do with the API, the time step control, something that could be done externally. But I think there's enough need, certainly expressed to our users, that adaptive time stepping is something that we're going to be adding.
Great. And speaking of solving and runtimes, how does the runtime on buoyancy or the variable density packages compare to using good old-fashioned CWAT or some of the other more traditional Maslow models for that matter, say USG?
Well, the short answer is I would say they're very similar. A variable density simulation in general requires fairly short time steps. That was true in CWAT, and that's also true in Modflow 6 and USG. We don't have a silver bullet for that at the moment. You essentially have to take relatively small time steps for these coupled transport models.
Great. And then just two final questions here, unless I get some more that come in on the chat, is if switching gears from practitioners to maybe stakeholders, how should stakeholders receiving Maslow models treat non-Maslow 6 versions? Is Maslow 6 just as reliable as the standards that have come before it? Are the ones before now out of date because Maslow 6 is around? How should a non-user that might be reviewing models treat Maslow 6 models?
So that's a great question, and it's sort of in line with an earlier question and how we view our legacy models. I mean, Modflow 2005, Modflow Newt, these are great models. They're accurate. They're robust. They've been tested extensively. So where they're different is going to be in the capabilities. You know, Modflow Newt doesn't have the ability to do local grid refinement in it, for example. Modflow 2005 doesn't have a transport model in it. So really, but the codes are they're based on each other. I would say Modflow 6 is an extension of in terms of capabilities from these other Modflow variations. So if you're using one of these other Modflow versions, by all means continue to do so. And if one day you transfer over to them, it's going to be because of the new capabilities that we've developed.
Great. And we've talked a lot about resources that are available, and if I remember, you had that slide with the 6 different images of forums and GitHubs and examples, et cetera, that are available for users with questions. When finding those resources, are they all listed on the USGS Maslow 6 splash page, or is there a really good place for people to go and find all these good resources that are available to them?
So, yes, all of the stuff is pretty easily accessible. Anything that there is the USGS sort of official version, and we release new versions about every 6 months or so. That's what you're going to see on the USGS website. But we do also have this very active development area where you're going to find all these other resources. And the best place to go to find all these other sort of more actively developed resources, including executables and how you might make suggestions for improvement, that's going to be through our GitHub Modflow 6 website. So I think that would be the next place to go in terms of finding what's really going on right now and asking questions.
So just some cleanup questions here. One that came in was the additional packages with the GWT model. Those are just available in Maslow 6, or are they also backwards compatible with USG?
So we share a lot of similarities with Modflow USG. We continue to do some things differently, and we will continue to do so. But I would say Modflow USG and Modflow 6 Transport have very similar capabilities under the hood. It's going to be some of these extensions where we're going to differ.
Okay, that makes sense. And just one final question: when it comes to contaminant transport, does the GWT have any degradation capability, or is it still in development?
That's
safe for TCE. Okay.
Yes, we do have first order decay, if I believe is what you're looking for. So yes, that is available in there now.
Great. Well, thank you very much. With that, I'll conclude at 11:30, because I know that people have time limitations. And I'll pass it back on over to you, Michael.
Thank you. Let's see. We want to thank Sophia very much for enduring through the technical difficulties and still managing to do a great job of moderating the questions. We thank Chris so much for spending the time to put together the presentation and to deliver it today for us. And I thank the participants for answering the questions that we provided and providing their feedback. If you do want an acknowledgement of your attendance or participation today, there is a feedback form that you can navigate to from the seminar homepage, and that's the same place. You can also download a PDF version of today's slides if you have not already. And we